Hello, this is News Director Larissa Donovan, and joining me on the phone for this interview is incumbent Ward 3 Councilmember Ron Johnson. How's it going today, Ron?
Going great, Larissa. Nice to speak with you.
Yeah. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, like how long have you been in Bemidji and how long you've been on the council?
Well, I've been in Bemidji a long time. I was born here in Bemidji. Actually, I grew up just about three blocks west of City Hall. City Hall area was my neighborhood growing up. I attended Central School Elementary, and then I attended junior high. We didn't have middle school back then. We had junior high, and then senior high. I graduated in 1968. I'm also a graduate of Bemidji State University. I started right after high school, and then ended up taking a little bit of a absence for military and to attend an art school. But I came back in 72 and I graduated from Bemidji State in 1975. And I've also taught there a number of years as an adjunct faculty. And then I was a grad assistant when I was working on my master's. So I have a lot of, all my schooling happened in, Bemidji. I did attend an art school in Alexandria and attended Brown Institute for Radio and Television Broadcasting in Minneapolis. But then I returned after that and got a job helping to start Lakeland PBS back in 1979, and I've been working for Lakeland PBS now. I'm in my 41st year there.
Oh wow!
So I'm pretty much rooted in Bemidji, born and raised for 69 years. So I'm just completing my 20th year on the council. I was elected to my first 4-year term back in 2000 and took office in January of 2001. So I'm looking at, I'm going after my sixth term.
Okay. All right. So what made you want to keep doing this?
Well, it gets in your blood. No, I've had a lot of it's been very enjoyable being on the city council. We've had a lot of good things happen and a lot of troublesome things, but it's all interesting work, and I think that especially now, I think that there's going to be quite a bit of turnover, or could potentially be a lot of turnover on the city council. But I do think having some experience on the council is a good thing. I don't think it's probably not so good to have a council made up of long-term people, all of them, or first-year people, all of them. I think a good mix is probably good. I know that I am been pretty active in the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and so I think that sometimes the connections and the influence you can have when you're lobbying the state for things can, that comes with experience. You don't just jump in and do that stuff. I was past president last year when the conference actually was in Bemidji. I'm currently serving as past president for the coalition, and also serving my fifth year on the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors. And so getting involved in state organizations can be good for the city of Bemidji. In 2019, we were able to get local government aid back to the 2002 level, which we've been trying to do for a number of years. But in 2019, under my leadership, it wasn't that I did it, but I was in charge of the coalition. I was president when it happened. And that meant significant aid to the city of Bemidji, about $175,000 worth. So it's good to be connected. And sometimes it takes a few years before you can build those relationships down at the Capitol. And so I think we've got a lot of things happening in the city right now that's going to take a lot of work down there. We need to get bonding dollars to take care of our water issue, and so having experience and having connections down at the Capitol are going to probably pay off for us once again.
All right, my next few questions are related to city issues, which I'm sure you know very well, given that you've served 20 years on the council already.
Yeah.
But as you know, half of the city is non-taxable land and property, so a significant burden to operate the city falls on the remaining city property taxpayers. What solutions do you think would solve that problem? Like, do you support a hospitality or sales tax to relieve some of that burden, especially for the costs of that Sanford Event Center?
Well, you know, when you first talk about the fact that pretty much half of the city property is tax exempt, that's an issue that we came into. And I know Nancy and I both got elected in 2000 at the same time, and the first thing we realized was that there hadn't been any real annexing of property outside the city for a number of years. And in fact, even people who are petitioning to want to come in, perhaps they wanted to be in the city because they wanted to be connected to city sewer, were met with resistance. And so we found that the city back then had, they had actually areas that were surrounded on three sides by the city. They had, there was one part of the city that was totally surrounded by the city, but the township was right in the middle. And so we felt that some of that that property needed to be part of the city limit. One way you can alleviate the problem is to grow your property lines. And so annexation, we were doing that pretty much by request, but we were, you know, out of that initiative came a joint agreement between both Bemidji Northern and the city of Bemidji. And the northern of Bemidji one ended up lasting the entire 20 years of that orderly annexation process. But I think that, you know, growing our boundaries can help bring more property in. But I think we also have a lot of property right in Bemidji that we could develop or redevelop, you know, to help with our property tax base. But, you know, when you're a government center, you're going to have a lot of non-taxable property. You're going to have a lot of county buildings. We have a lot of city buildings, of course. We have a lot of churches, and we have
schools and hospitals.
Federal offices too. You know, with the Indian Health Service and that type of thing. So we just have a lot of. We're kind of like St. Paul is in a little bit. We just do have a lot of government buildings and they're tax exempt. You know, getting the one of the ways we can solve that, and we continue to work on that, and that's why the coalition is so important, is local government aid is based on a formula, and part of that is the number of regional centers, and a lot of regional centers are faced with this problem more than other cities, and look, the local government aid, if you can adjust the formula, could help us help compensate for some of those tax exempt properties.
All right. My next question is concerning the Highway 197 business corridor. MnDOT plans to work on that stretch of highway in 2024, and the plan for multiple roundabouts was famously scrapped. What do you think should happen there to improve safety while maintaining accessibility? I know MnDOT won't go through with a plan unless the city council, you know, essentially gives it their blessing.
I think that when we had that issue come before us and the vote was voted down 4-3, there was a lot of people who thought that we were, or at least I was, anti-roundabout. I'm certainly not that. I think roundabouts were great.
Yeah.
I think that, for example, at the Sanford Center, if we wouldn't have had roundabouts at those exits going out of that, the traffic moves so nicely out of there after an event where you have multiple cars. And there's all kinds of great examples of roundabout use throughout our state. I know they put one in south of Park Rapids just last summer, and I use that road a lot when we go to our cabin. And that intersection is so great now with a roundabout. So our roundabouts are very good. It's just that on this particular stretch, we were hearing from the business owners that they just did not want it. I mean, unanimous. And that told me that maybe that the planning didn't do their work. You know, I mean, if you're going to suggest a change like that that could affect the livelihood of those businesses, you need to have them as part of the planning process. And so I think that's why they're taking another run at that. And I also think that, there's different intersections on the west end of 197 than there is on the eastern part. I mean, they didn't even propose one at the liquor store intersection, you know, and so the area that is in my ward sounds like that's not really going to be addressed with roundabouts, at least initially. I think that they're looking mostly at the Han Avenue and the the intersection over by Walmart. And they're putting together a task force, and I think HRDC is going to be kind of facilitating that. And that, they're a good organization. I've been a member of the – one of my assignments as a councilman has been to be on the HRDC board, and it's a great board, and it's a great staff, and they'll do a good job. And I think that you need to get some business buy-in. You know, when you have 100% of them telling you they don't want it, you need to listen to that because they are taxpayers.
Yeah.
Businesses, they have a big chunk of the tax. But to say we're not four roundabouts in a blanket statement is not really fair. I know a lot of people also are concerned with trails and pedestrian ways. And, you know, that has to be addressed whether you have roundabouts or not. You know, I mean, I think that those are two different those are two separate issues. They need to be addressed whether we move forward with roundabouts or not. And I know that they're going to be reconstructing that stretch, whether it's roundabouts or not also. It's just due to be redone. The other thing that we need to be concerned with is at least the roundabouts plan that they had presented us back then was going to cost the city in excess of $3 million. You know, so we need to also come up with the money if we're going to do major changes like that also. So, but, you know, I think 197 is, they're going to take another run at it. I think they're going to have a little more business involved committee to look at that, and we'll see where that goes.
All right, my next question is concerning the city's water system. It needs an expensive fix, and without those legislative bonding dollars or a sales tax, that burden will likely fall to the utility ratepayers. What are your thoughts on the project, and what do you think will happen if we don't get that legislative help?
Well, you know, we did talk about it at the last meeting that we were on the thing, and I did raise that question. You know, that it was in the bonding bill. At least I think the House had it in for $12 million, and the Senate had I think an $8 million. Mark into it before they ended up adjourning without passing a bonding bill. But I do know that there probably is going to be another session coming up shortly, and I think they're going to try to address this. There's a lot of cities, not just Bemidji, that are faced with similar issues regarding their water. And I know a lot of cities have had help, and so we certainly need it, and it's going to be really hard if we don't get any kind of bonding help from the state. It's going to could potentially raise our water fees significantly, and
something like 14%. That's what Ron Eichens was saying. Yeah,
I think it was. You know, and that's looking at if we have to just do it ourselves, which is one of the reasons why we need to have connections down at the state legislature, and. It's also another reason why LGA has to be looked at because, you know, we raise a lot of sales tax up here and then we send it to the state and we get it allocated back, you know, as a form of local government aid. But, you know, if we have to do it all ourselves, it's going to be very spendy fix. And it's not a problem that we really created ourselves. You know, I mean, it was a chemical that was not deemed dangerous when they were using it at our airport where our wells happen to be located. And so it needs to be taken care of. I'm pretty comfortable that we're probably going to get some bonding dollars. I also would be surprised if we don't end up, you know, settling with the manufacturers to get some compensation also. And in fact, I believe in the House bill that was asking for 12, they were looking at you know, paying back any settlement we got back to the legislature if we were to get the settlement. In other words, you know, because I think that could be coming, but those things take a lot longer, and we need to get the plant and the water taken care of immediately.
All right, my next couple of questions concern some recent events, such as recent events in the city and the state have highlighted the issues of racism and distrust of the government. What would you do if reelected to the council to improve race relations and trust?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, I serve on the league board, and I know that's been a major focus of the league also, because the league actually represents Minneapolis, and it also represents Roseau. And, and Ely in small towns, mm-hmm. and all the towns in between. And so, you know, every city, I think, is different. Every city is looking at this differently. I do think that our chief, Police Chief Maston, has done a good job, I think, working with our residents. And I'm not really thinking that we have as big of an issue in Bemidji as maybe other cities have. But I think that we need to continue to work on that. And I think that the league is probably going to be a leader in kind of coming up with a direction for cities, because that's one of the things they do, is take the focus on these types of things. And being on the board, that's going to be something that I'm going to probably be able to relay back to Bemidji as far as ways we can make and improve any situation.
All right, my final question is on COVID-19. While many businesses are beginning to reopen to closer to normal capacity, what do you think the city council's role should be in a public health emergency should this something like this ever happen again?
Well, that's been a challenge for Bemidji, being that we haven't, at least as of yet, experienced the type of alarming numbers that they're experiencing, and even in Minneapolis, but you know, across the nation, and it seems like a lot of people say it just hasn't come yet, and a lot of people say it's going to probably be a second wave in the fall. But I think that for cities to just go off, I mean, you know, we initially took our direction from the president, and then the governor, reacting on the president's move, took over, and we really, like other cities, need to go by we can't be off doing things by ourselves, we've had people saying we should pass resolutions or do things against the governor, and doing that just as a city is not probably the way to do it. I've been on a number of calls with the league, but particularly with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which actually has 100 cities in Greater Minnesota that share common interests. They're non-metro, and I think we had a conversation with the governor, and he'll listen to 100 cities a little more than he'll listen to maybe one city here and maybe one city over there. And so I thought that's the direction to take it. I think that our businesses were suffering, and it didn't seem to be real fair that some businesses could be open and some couldn't. It just seemed like there was, I understand essential and non-essential, but I know that the comparison was made to like Walmart, who it was probably essential because they do sell food. But people are going in there buying bikes and televisions and everything else. And so the people who are selling that and not food were really, were not really happy about that. But it's, I guess there's no plan that's necessarily perfect. I know we tried to help out the restaurants just recently by allowing and working with them to have some outside seating. Now it looks like they can be inside at 50%, so that's going to be a nice compliment to being outside when it's nice. So hopefully that's going to help them in the throughout this summer. But having all these events canceled is just it's devastating to a town like Bemidji that everything from dragon boats to the fairs.
We wait all winter for these.
Oh, yeah. And of course, I work at Lakeland PBS, and we're part of all that. And I got this list every time we meet in our promotions meeting. I have all these things that we're planning to do that have been canceled or postponed. It's just kind of like people are just ready to go do something. When you read, depending on what you read and what you listen to, it sounds like it's not gone, and they're expecting it's going to probably be maybe this summer, and people outside, it's not as spread as fast, but I'm a little worried about fall without a vaccine and when things start happening. It's everything's up in the air, including schools, and what the college is going to do. And a lot of what happens is also affecting our event center, which closed right now. I mean, everything that happens there happens with people. You know, we don't, you know, so when you can only have small gatherings, you can't even do weddings. I mean, if people who aren't having a very large wedding, they wouldn't probably use the Sanford Center anyway. It's used for the ones that need the bigger, mm-hmm. bigger space. And then any kind of meetings and conventions and all that, it's just it's really locked up. And if BSU doesn't have in-person attendance, I know that they're still talking about how the fall is going to look like. But that's kind of a concern for the economy too, because the economy depends on that influx of students coming to town and buying groceries and being part of our economy. And if they're doing it online, staying home, that's not going to be good. Plus, I'm not sure what'll happen to the fall sports or the hockey program, which starts in October. You know, if they can't have fans, I'm not sure they're going to be able to necessarily have a season. Or it might be delayed. I've heard rumors it might start halfway through or something like that. But that's all concerning for the city also, because that's our big tenant, our main tenant.
All right, Ron. Well, before we wrap this up, is there anything else you wanted to touch on before I let you go?
No, you covered most everything that's on the minds of people, I believe. I think that it's going to be, I really kind of, it's very interesting. We do have a lot of candidates. We have, potentially could have, well, we will have after this meeting, because we will be declaring another vacancy with the at-large seat. So we're going to have potentially six new council members, or at least six competitive races. So that's
a big swath of it.
That's a first for my time on the council, that's for sure. And it's always fun having new people to work with, getting new ideas and new perspectives. And so and not just when they get elected, but even through the election process, hearing from different opinions and what people are thinking about out there. So it's going to be an interesting summer and fall. So I'm looking forward to hopefully getting another 4-year term on the council. I've been kind of using the analogy that I played a lot of sports, and I will certainly watch a lot, and I'm not sure if you're a sports fan or not, but if you notice, the best teams that I've been on and the best teams that I've watched are teams that are made up of a lot of good rookies, maybe some journeymen, and some veterans to kind of, pass along experience. So I don't think a team full of veterans or a team full of just rookies always are the best. I think there needs to be some experience, but it's also good to have new blood. So hopefully when the election shakes out, we'll have a good mix on the council, because we're going to need, it's going to be a lot of work in the next few years to take care of a lot of the issues facing the city of Bemidji.
All right. Thank you so much, Ron Johnson, for Ward 3.
Yeah.